Love and Torah, part 32. What's love got to do? Okay, so we're trying to understand what love has to do with all of this stuff. Because after all, I know we've said this a lot in these 32 parts, but that is kind of the battle you have when you talk to your friends and family members who are still in the mainstream of Christianity and those kind of things is, you know, they seem to think that there is a kind of opposites between love and commandment keeping. Somehow they're not linked at all, but they're either or and that kind of thing. And, you know, we've been spending 30-something hours here trying to make the case that from Scripture, that's just not the case. From Scripture, they are inextricably linked together. The expectation is that you will express your love through His instructions on how to love. That we will love Him according to the way He instructs us to love Him, and we'll love each other according to the instructions on how to love each other. And so we've now shifted towards, you know, after spending the whole, 20-something parts on focusing on the first of the two great commandments, the kind of categorizing the commandments into two categories, loving Him and loving each other. You can take all the commandments and they fit into one of those two categories. So we focused all of those teachings on loving Him. Now we're up to loving each other. We're trying to figure out how to love each other. We're going to talk about who's your neighbor and all those kind of things in this part. And so we went to Ephesians chapter 5, and we began in verse 1, and we didn't get very far because spontaneously a group therapy session broke out in the middle of the teaching, and we got into some really good and important stuff. All right, let's begin in verse 1 again, and we'll just read through the first 3 verses for context, the first 2 verses just to get going. All right? Become then imitators of Elohim as beloved children, and walk in love as Messiah also has loved us and gave Himself for us, a gift and an offering to Elohim for a sweet-smelling fragrance. Okay, so the main point of this, just a kind of quick recap, we're doing everything that we're doing through imitation. Okay, Yeshua showed us and said everything He did, His Father had told Him to do, showed Him to, He saw His Father do. So He imitated perfectly His Heavenly Father. And then we're taught through the discipleship program. The reason I put quotes on that is because very rarely, or if anywhere, is anybody actually doing real discipleship the way Yeshua did it. It's hard in today's societies to be able to take your life, put everything else on hold, and then go and disciple with a teacher. They spent every day, all day, with their teacher, okay? But it was through imitation. Not just everything He said that came out of His mouth. They watched Him interact with everybody. They watched how He handled children, how He handled adults, how He handled challenges from the leadership of the time. They watched Him handle things. Okay? So become then imitators of Elohim, and we do this as beloved children. So to be a beloved child, you're going to imitate Him. You're going to walk in love as Messiah also loved us. So we're going to let Him be the definer of what that looks like. And what does that look like? He gave Himself for us. He was willing to lay down His life for us. So He gave Himself for us, a gift and offering to Elohim for a sweet-smelling fragrance. When you put others first, I know I said this already last week, but so what? When you put others first, that is pleasing. That's what it means, a sweet-smelling fragrance. That is pleasing to Yahweh. That's pleasing to the Father and the Son. When you only think of yourself or preference yourself, well, yeah, I'd like to help, but I'd like to only do the things I'd like to do. Or I'd like to serve, but I've got my own idea of what that should look like. You know, we don't want to be Jonah. I'm here, I'm good, but don't send me to Nineveh. I'll do anything else you want. I don't want to go, but I don't like those people, those sinners, those terrible people over there. We don't want to be like Korach. Well, you know, why can't I do your job? Your job looks like more important and more glamorous. I get to carry the ark and stuff. I don't even get to look at it or cover it, but I get to just cover it, carry the stuff after it's all packed up. What kind of job is that? It's the one you were given. That's what kind of job it was. And more important, it's the one that was given to you by the straight down the line from the Creator. But see, you have to believe that that's where it came from, because he only heard it from Moses. And he wasn't necessarily believing that it came from Moses. He wasn't necessarily believing that it was coming from the Father through Moses. I mean, he said things like, well, you make yourself up to be a big deal, Moses. We were all in Egypt. We all saw the miracles. We all came out. Even his own brother and sister was thinking, hey, And then Yahweh had to say, excuse me. I talk to him, not the way I talk to you guys. And then he talks to you. Okay? Now that's the structure. That's the structure that all of it works through. Now the hard part for all of us, if we're going to be imitators of Elohim, is that we have to be willing to trust that structure. Okay? We have to be willing to trust that structure. Because some of you are thinking, I would have trusted Moses. Well, now that you read him in your scriptures, you would. But would you have trusted him if you were coming out of Egypt? Did you know who this guy was? Some of you just recently found me as a teacher. You got to figure out, am I anointed and appointed? Am I coming through that same sort of structure? I'm not sure this is going to work with this rain being so loud. Can you guys even hear me? Okay. So, we are to do these things as he did them. In the same way, with the same level of trust. Now remember, Yeshua knew who he was trusting. Then he trained people, anointed them and appointed them. And if you find those people, you're supposed to, once they have been identified, trust them. So you can imitate them and allow them to lay hands on you and mold you. See, a lot of times we don't understand the idea of the laying on of hands. The eldership can lay hands on you with the idea of molding you. Okay? Now, he then contrasts this, we get to verse 3. So that was a sweet-smelling fragrance. That was pleasing to the Father. But he says, but whoring, all uncleanness, or greed of gain, let it not even be named among you, as it is proper among set-apart ones. So we know what whoring is, I guess, and we know what greed of gain is, but this uncleanness, okay, maybe a little bit more ambiguous, a little bit tougher for people. So what do we mean, what does he mean, more importantly, by uncleanness? Well, when you go back, if you understand your Old Testament, you understand the things that have to do with Tameh and Tahor. Tameh is unclean, Tahor is clean. What things made you Tameh? Well, anything that Yahweh said you shouldn't touch or shouldn't eat or shouldn't do. You shouldn't come in contact with. So this uncleanness actually covers all of the other behaviors beyond things like whoring and greed of gain. Anything that would render you unclean. Interacting with things you shouldn't interact with. Things he says, don't touch certain things. Don't handle certain things. Don't spend time with certain people. I'm not trying to sound all judgmental there, but it says that. It also talks about that if you eat something or if you end up having to do something, it can make you unclean. Look, there's even things that go outside of your control that make you unclean. I mean, ladies had to go through that every month. It wasn't that they did anything that was wrong. They were designed to have that cycle every month, but it rendered them unclean. So Yahweh defines the unclean, is my point, okay? So he says, whoring, all uncleanness, and greed of gain, let not even any of this stuff, let it not even be named among you. In other words, nobody should be talking about, oh, do you know someone's always doing this unclean thing? He says, as is proper among set apart ones, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather thanksgiving. Now let's stop for a second and understand. So we're contrasting when he said, this is, without a lot of details, this is pleasing to Yahweh, to love as Messiah loved, to walk as he walked, to give of yourself as he gave of himself. And this is all about how we love each other. Remember the second great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, or love each other. Now, if you're whoring or unclean or filthy talking and foolish talking and coarse jesting and all these other things, that's not the way to love each other. That's not loving treatment of each other. For this you know, verse 5, that no one who whores nor unclean one nor one greedy of gain who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the reign of Messiah and Elohim? All right, so let's stop right there. He says, you're supposed to know this. He says, for this you know. No one who whores nor unclean one. Now, the greedy of gain, understand, it's not that you shouldn't desire a better life financially. Greedy of gain, think of it as the driving force behind why you do what you do. In other words, I may desire to get education or skills to make a better living or better income so that my family can have a better enjoyment of life in a physical living. That's not greedy of gain. Greedy of gain is if I'm motivated, especially when it comes to in the body, because I'm going to get some sort of financial benefit, this is wrong. Or if all I care about is the money and the greed and the gain, but not to have it be a blessing to my family and others. So it's the motivator, it's the greed of gain, not having. Some churches and some systems have tried to convince everybody that somehow having abundance is bad or evil or something. No, it's not, okay? Now, what ends up causing evil in your life is not knowing how to have or not have. Because you could have plenty and still be miserable. You could have plenty and still have a horrible life. And we read all kinds of events and articles and see news things of all kinds of very wealthy people killing themselves, ending up on drugs and destroying their life because money doesn't make you happy, okay? There are a lot of happy people from the poorest you can imagine to the wealthiest and many that are miserable from the poorest to the happiest. The money is not what makes the difference. So, but I just want to be clear here when he says greed of gain, because some of you are working hard on your, you know, on trying to make your living and provide for your families and to be able to give to other people. That's good. Okay, so don't look at it as an amount of money. It's the focus on the driver behind your efforts. Okay? If it's just to make money, to have money, to be just throwing people, say, look at how wealthy and rich I am. That's not the right driver. Okay, so hopefully that was clear. Then he says, look, you know that these people have no inheritance in the reign of Messiah and Elohim. Now notice he did not say that it has anything to do with birthrights, race, anything else. He says, look, your behavior choices are going to determine your inheritance. It's not whether you're a Jew or Gentile. Doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, free or slave. Right? Paul tells us these things in other places. But this is about choices. You know, and we have a school here, and at the school, the academy we have, I teach the Torah class, and we've been going through some of my teachings with the middle school and high schoolers, and we just started going through the making decisions, the reason you exist. And I'm telling you right now, all of you should be listening to that like every month. It's one part. And it will help you get your head straight. You need to know. And that's what this is all about here. The whole idea of love Elohim with all your heart and strength and love each other. So what is he doing? He's watching us make choices on how we do that. Or even whether or not we do that. See, the inheritance issue here at the end of verse 5 is based on what? The decision to whore or not whore. To be unclean or not be unclean, to be an idolater or not be an idolater. In other words, he starts listing these things and says, I'm watching you. I want to see the decisions you make. And based on those decisions, you'll have your inheritance or not. Now, by the way, if you, and we all did at some point, so please bear with me. If you do any of these things or have done these things, that doesn't mean you're doomed and done. He's now talking about this as a defining characteristic. Okay? So being an idolater, not someone who did idolatry once upon a time. Not someone who whored at some point, but that is what you are. Not someone that, okay, just keep doing all the different things, okay? It's kind of like a conversation I had with somebody once upon a time, and I said, stop it, that's so annoying. And the person got so mad at me and offended because I thought they were an annoying person. I said, no, you're not an annoying person. The thing you're doing right this second is in my opinion, irritating me, or I'm finding it annoying. But there are those out there that in doing the habit over and over again, the behavioral act over and over again, it becomes a defining characteristic. They become bitter, angry, all the negative things you can think of. I don't want to just go through all the list. If you stay in that emotional place long enough, it's who you are at that point. By the way, it works the other way around. People might know you as joyful and happy and pleasant and, you know, calm, and because you are that way so often, it actually has become you. So let's understand, those who are looking towards an inheritance, you need to make your Yeshua-like imitation behaviors. You're imitating him, be your, we used to call it, one of the teachings, we call it the intrinsic nature. We're talking about the spirit, right? And understanding the Ruach, we talked about that people could have the spirit of jealousy. Well, no, it's not like an outside entity that comes into you, but your intrinsic nature is that you're not just jealous, you now are jealous. Not just jealous like at that moment, but this is who you are now. You're always in that state of mind. Or the spirit of rebellion, or the spirit of anger, the spirit, all those things can be now your nature as opposed to where you are at that moment. And it's your nature that he's looking at to decide your inheritance. I want to make sure we're clear, because a lot of times these things go by, and the next thing you know, the hands go up, and people want to know, well, I had this thing, and this went on in my life, so am I just kind of out of luck, it's over? And the answer is no. Not unless you choose to stay or continue that way. If that was in your past, then it's okay. This is important. Group therapy time, real quick. Okay? The person you are right now, sitting here right now, is not the person you were yesterday. That person doesn't exist. Yesterday doesn't exist. You have information in your head about yesterday. You could be anybody you want right now. Today is today. Now, everybody around you might not get it if you totally change, because they're expecting you to be like yesterday. But you have to say, I'm sorry, but that person doesn't exist. The only one that exists is me right now. And the future you doesn't exist, so that means you have full power to become whatever you want when you get there, and that will still be the only one of you that exists. Stop letting your past or your fear of the future control everything you're doing. Do now. This is the only real time and space you have. Now. Okay? You live in now. You are now. So whoever you are, it's like when you go in the mikvah, right? They say you're burying the old man, you're coming out of newness of life. Well, when you woke up this morning, you started a newness of life. You could choose to be or act or behave or think any possible different, million different ways you could be. Some of you may have had this experience in your life where you changed living locations or schools or something, and you realized, wow, these people don't know the person I used to be over that other place. They're not expecting me to behave a certain way. I can literally recreate myself right here and be whatever I choose to be. They have no expectations, no preconceived understandings. So when you come into the body, we should all be allowing everybody that moment, every moment, that they can be anything right now. Well, you know, but the way last week, that's last week, doesn't exist anymore. Now, you may not believe the change is going to keep going, so maybe sit back and watch a little bit, but give them the opportunity to be changed. Look, all of us are supposed to be transforming and conforming into the image of Yeshua, and that doesn't yet look like you. Or you don't yet look like him, if you understand what I'm saying. But we should all be looking for and open to that person we're interacting with becoming that. I mean, that is why we're here, right? To make the choices and decisions to make that transformation happen. To be yielded to that transformational process. But now when we are loving each other, are you giving the person space to do that? Oh, but you don't know what that person did to me last year. Well, that was last year. Now, that doesn't mean you all of a sudden have to become best friends and everything, but just you don't have to hold all of that negative stuff. Aren't you hoping that person, look, no matter what anybody ever did to you in life, don't you hope they change? Wouldn't you like to hope and believe that they would change? And so why not have that expectancy waiting on that to happen? And by the way, don't go up to say, especially when it's your spouse or your children, well, come on, speed this up. Let's get that change going. They're all walking out their own salvation in fear and trembling. You can't speed them up. By the way, be happy they're not trying to speed you up. All of us are moving slow. Okay, we may have our fast moments where we get sort of a leap forward, but then we kind of get comfortable and we slow down a little bit. And so we all could get use a little nudge or a little kick to kind of get us moving forward a little quicker. But the reason we're so slow, the reason we're so stuck, is because of our being sort of locked into the past and the future mindset instead of now. You lose and waste so much time now. Okay? I just thought of an interesting analogy. Maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't. You have to sort of be a sports person to kind of get this analogy, okay? Because when I played sports, one of the things that made me very good at what I did when I played whatever sports I played, when it was a team sport, is that because of my swiftness of thought in the now, even if I might not have been the fastest person out there, what made me so good, what made Michael Jordan so good, what made a lot of these athletes so good, is the speed of making that first step. Okay, their first response is so quick. See, if you're not in the moment, in the now, you're thinking too much about what happened right before or what's going to be going forward, that you're not moving. And then you're behind, or the person gets past you that you're supposed to be covering, or whatever it is. It's the speed of that first step. My point is not so much that you think about, oh, I got to move faster. No. To move faster, though, you have to be here. In this moment, excited about this moment and going forward, and not all locked in going, yeah, but I had a bad morning, and yes, last week was rough, and you know, I'm having a problem. But this one, you got to be here and optimistic and with your hope and ready to go. Okay? The past can't go forward. The future doesn't exist yet. So the only thing is now. And so if we're going to do these things, he says, imitate Elohim. Well, you can't imitate him last month. Whatever you did, you did. Maybe you imitated him, maybe you didn't. Doesn't matter now. What are you doing now? See, this journey is an everyday, every moment thing, because he's trying to see how you're going to be over a period of time before he gives you an endless amount of time. Now, you might be good for a week, a month. He's trying to trust you with forever. He wants to trust you with forever. And you know what? You're not trustworthy if you're locked into the past. We learn from the past. We grow from the past. We live now. This is it. And instead of, you know, I think it would shock you if you did an inventory of how you spend your time. You know, I work, and I've worked a lot in business, okay? And so running an organization is like a business. I'm not saying that a congregation is like a business, but we have an organization like a business. And one of the things that we are very poor at is being efficient in the use of our time. We move stuff from one side of the desk to the other side of the desk and think we did something. Okay? And if people come and say, Rabbi, your desk is a mess, that's because I'm too busy doing something. Because some things I'm doing are more important than moving the papers from this side to that side, or making them in, you know, alphabetical and sorted and all that stuff. Sometimes that needs to get done or you can't find anything. But you understand what I'm saying? We do busy work. We think, well, you know, I pray every day and I read my verses. Great. But are you doing anything with that? That's only information. We're to be imitators of Elohim. They walk. What does Yeshua say? My Father works, I work too. They are doing what they need to be doing. Yes, Yeshua would take time and pray. Yes, he would study the word. But what is it then leading to? It's supposed to fuel the other stuff. It's supposed to fuel your decision-making apparatus to give you the wisdom and the guidance to make better decisions. But we have to understand that we're not, if we're not doing that correctly, we're going to end up in the stuff in verses 3, 4, and 5 that we don't want. You know, that stuff leads to no inheritance. Because somebody's thinking, when's he going to tie this back to the verses? I don't just read things like this and go, oh, I need to not do that. I want to understand why anybody does that. Why I do some things that I know I shouldn't do. We all struggle. Even Paul, right? He says, the things I want to do, I don't do, and that which I don't want to do, I do. So don't just try to say, oh, I struggle. Why? Why are we struggling? Where's the weakness that needs to be strengthened? Where's the counsel maybe that you need? Maybe you find out that there's areas in your life that, you know, I know you hate to hear this, but Billy talked about it in his teaching a little while back. You may have a problem where, not in general, I want to kind of pre-strike here, not in general as an intrinsic nature, but you may have an area of laziness where that area you do not want to put effort into. That's all that laziness means, a lack of desire to put in the effort. And there are absolutely, you know, we're told to examine ourselves before Passover and other times of the year. Absolutely, if you examine yourself, you're going to find there are areas that you really avoid putting in the effort. And then if someone called you out and called you lazy, you'd want to throw down and have a fight. But that's really what it is. It's avoiding the effort. But it needs to get done. If you want the inheritance, I mean, it needs to get done. And so let's make sure that we understand this. Listen to verse 6. Let no one deceive you with empty words. Now, there's more to the sentence there, but let's just stop there. Why would he say that? Well, see, you know what? You could go to another preacher, another teacher, and he could start in verse 6. Let no one deceive you with empty words. And he could take that anywhere. But wait a minute, it's not just anywhere. It's right in the part that talks about what gets you and what doesn't get you your inheritance. And so he says, don't let anyone deceive you with empty words as to how you receive your inheritance. You need to be aware of how you treat each other. Because if you don't treat each other right, you have no inheritance. That's important. He says, don't let anyone deceive you with empty words. In other words, words that really will avail you nothing. And that person may really believe everything they're saying. You know, I am confident that most of the people that stand in front of a microphone and teach from this book believe what they're selling. And they're genuine. But the words are empty because the words are not going to bring the result. So don't always think that it's the person trying to deceive you. You could be deceived if you listen to empty words. Words that won't fill you with what you need. There's a lot of teachers out there you can go listen to. There's a lot of them. Some of them may have words that are empty. Some of them not. I don't know. I'm not judging anybody. But you have to wonder when you go out and listen what you should be asking yourself. Are these empty words? Or are these words of life? Am I liking what I'm hearing because the delivery is more pleasant maybe than somebody else? Or am I liking it because it's more familiar to where I came from? Or because it's what I want to hear? Or listen to what he's saying here. He's getting right in everybody's face. Look, if you're going to do all these things and don't knock it off, you're not getting in. That's his way of saying exactly that. And inheritance, by the way, is a theme here because, again, we know that we've talked about this many times. What's the main thing when you're studying? Context, context, context. So to get context, what do we need to do? We need to go ahead and figure out, well, who's talking? Who's the audience? Where are they? What's going on? But also, when we're looking at a particular thing, we have to say, well, why is this an issue? Well, because he was just talking, Rabbi, you just sold us from verse 1. No. This issue goes back a lot further than verse 1. As a matter of fact, it goes all the way to chapter 2. You can go all the way to chapter 2, where it says, by the way, verse 11, or actually even verse 1 of chapter 2, you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of the world, according to the rule of the authority of the air, and the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. Okay, by the way, the spirit that was walking the sons of disobedience does not mean that they knew the truth and they were disobeying actively. The world is always walking in disobedience to Yahweh. They just don't know it. Now, let me connect that just to be clear, because he says, look, he says, you were dead in your trespasses and sins. You did not know what was going on. We can drop down to verse 11 real quick. He says, therefore, remember that you once Gentiles. What's a Gentile? Anybody not in covenant. We'll make it real simple. Okay? I don't care your race. I don't care your gender. I don't care your height or weight. I don't care your age. It's anybody not covenanted. He says, you were once not covenanted. And that was, he says, you were in the flesh. You were doing, in other words, the flesh, the below, the earthly things are not of covenant. He says, who were called as a title, the uncircumcision. That's Paul's way of calling you those who were not born in Israel. The Jews, he's mostly talking about here. He refers to them as the circumcision. This is never, when he talks about it, about the actual thing called circumcision. Those born of the Jewish community he refers to as the circumcision. Everybody else is the uncircumcision. Because that was the visible, theoretical, when I say theoretical, because they were supposed to be covenanted, but they weren't always behaving like one. Which is why Paul in other places says, though you are of the circumcision, your behavior can turn to, you might as well be of the uncircumcision. So your circumcision avails you nothing. So what's being judged there? Of course, the same thing. Choices, your behavior based on decisions. So he says here, look, remember, you once, Gentiles in the flesh, you were called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision made in flesh by hands. That, listen now, that at that time you were without Messiah, excluded from the citizenship of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no expectation and without Elohim in the world. In other words, you had no inheritance. See, that same theme is right here at the beginning. Probably if I went back into chapter 1, I'd find it some more. So when you're here in chapter 5, if you're going to be reading anything anywhere, stop doing what you learned in Christianity. Just read that verse and think you know what's going on. You need to backtrack a little bit or make sure it's a book you know really well so you already know what's back there. I already know that Ephesians chapter 2 was back there. Didn't think about it until I was just reading it just now and talking to you. I said, wait a minute, I know that's happening 3 chapters earlier. So let's go back there and read it. This is about the same theme. You were here. The theme is you were of the world, the below, the flesh, the earthly. In verse 4 of chapter 2, Elohim, who is rich in compassion because of his great love for us, even when we were dead, made us alive together with Messiah. So even though you were dead, he still called you. All of you fall into this category. Me too. Even though I was born of the circumcision. Wasn't keeping anything. Not really. A little here, a little there, but not much. So my behavior was of the uncircumcision. He says, you were dead. He says, so now when we get to chapter 5, he's saying, look, now that Abba's called you and Messiah has made you alive, you need to understand that you have to imitate Elohim lest you imitate the world. The flesh, treat each other in this way is acting of the world and the flesh. So this is not just your personal walk, like what you eat, whether you show up on Shabbat. This is how you're now treating each other, as exemplified as worldly, fleshly, earthly behavior, or above spiritual heavenly behavior. But we're supposed to imitate the above. That's a connection here. What's at play here? What's that risk? I don't know. How about your inheritance? Everything. Some people like to ask the question all the time. I hear this question, not in a long time, but I used to hear it all the time. Well, you know, is that a salvation issue? I don't know. He just said it was. Not a salvation, but an inheritance issue. But to me, when you ask the question salvation issue, what you're asking is it going to affect my inheritance? Because the people who taught you about salvation incorporated both as if they're the same thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to Are You Saved? Okay? So when someone says, well, is that a salvation issue? What they're asking is that going to keep me out of the kingdom? Is that a kingdom, reward, inheritance-related issue? That's what they're asking. Because they don't have any ability in their minds to separate salvation as provided by Yeshua and then it only being the making available, not only, in a, like, I don't want to minimize that, but all it does, in a big way, is make available the possibility of the inheritance. Without the salvation provided, there is no inheritance. So it's huge. Can't be anything bigger. But all it does is provide the opportunity. Everything else is an inheritance issue. How you treat each other is an inheritance issue. How you love Elohim is an inheritance issue. It wouldn't be an issue if there wasn't already salvation made available to you. Then what you did wouldn't really matter at all. You would just live and then eventually you would die. So it's a reward issue. And what he's trying to tell you here, Paul's trying to say, look, it's not just as some people might get. And you see this in the hypocrisy and when you read about the Pharisees and Sadducees. You've seen it forever in the ministries you've been a part of. You know, they look all good up and whatever, and then they're out there acting whatever, the fool. Talking doesn't matter. Information doesn't matter. You need to talk properly, and you need to have the information. But what matters is the choices and the behavior that comes out of those choices. Oh, we know the great command is to love Elohim with all... Okay, so you know that, but what are you doing? How are you doing that? Are you doing that? And love your neighbor as yourself. I'm not doing that until I figure out who my neighbor is. Knock it off. How about let's start treating everybody better? That's not going to get you in any trouble or hurt anything. That doesn't mean you have to love everybody the way that whatever it is he's specifically talking about, and we'll get into that. But we have a lot of improvement in that area. We can certainly do. Absolutely, we can do a lot better in that area. The motivator, though, has to be that this affects your inheritance. Because he says, these people, you know that no one doing these things has any inheritance. Now, it's not just these things. Right away, you go back to Ephesians 2. It says, oh, you mean those people that are behaving outside the covenant have no inheritance. The inheritance is only for the covenanted people. If you don't like that, I'm sorry. If it hurts your feelings, I'm sorry. Now, listen to the teaching, the Millennium and Kingdom, so you understand that that opportunity absolutely will be made available to everyone at some point. And they will have to do the same thing you're having to do, which is choose. Are you going to take advantage of the inheritance being offered to you through the salvation provided to you by Yeshua? The world doesn't understand what he did. Guess what? It still affects them. They still all have salvation available to them. They just don't know it. Because he said, I give my life for who? The whole world. That's everybody. Yeshua didn't just die for Christians or Jews or Israel or whatever, covenanted people. He died so that all might have an opportunity for inheritance. Pay attention to what I said. So all might have an opportunity. In other words, they'll have the opportunity. That doesn't mean they get the inheritance. What's going to matter is what you do with your opportunity. Okay, I could walk around in this room, don't get excited, and give every one of you $100,000. Hold on. And you know what? It wouldn't help all of you. It might ruin some of you. So just because that something has been given to you, salvation has been made available to you, doesn't necessarily mean any value to you if you don't know what to do with it. And so you are in that position, right? Do you know the Father and the Son? When we talked about how he opened up your eyes and your ears and he revealed, the Father revealed the Son and the Son revealed the Father. When you had all that revealed to you in proper covenanted context, now all of your decisions and choices are paramount. They're everything. And we still go around very lackadaisical, very just willy-nilly, you know, just casually going about it. Well, I shouldn't say that. We probably, all of you, take certain little pieces of it and you get obsessively focused on those. And so you're not going to mess that one little thing up or these five little things up. But are we taking the full spectrum of it? It's like when I've had to say over and over and over again to people that you absolutely could be right about something, but if you treat people in the harsh, not fruit of the Spirit way, like love, joy, peace, if you're not patient with them and gentle and kind, you're still wrong. I mean, why would there actually be a phrase, and this is sad that this exists, Torah terrorist? There are people that have been called Torah terrorists. Because you're keeping of it, you became the person that went out there and had to beat everybody up who wasn't doing it the way you thought they needed to. It's like some reformed smokers out there. Boy, if anybody goes anywhere near them with a cigarette, they'll likely knock the cigarette. I watch people walk up to other people and grab the cigarettes out of their pocket and crush them. Look, I don't think you should be smoking, but that's rude. That's not your, you shouldn't trespass their space. But you do the same thing when it comes to Torah observance. You want to get into their space. And by the way, you're also usurping authorities whose job it is to work with them. So now you've got double problems. You know, I remember being somewhere and seeing something that was going on and somebody pointed it out. And my response was, okay, well, that young lady that you're talking about, I know for a fact that her husband is here and he's part of the group. And also her father is here and so is her pastor. This is back when I was in Worldwide Church of God. And I said, so this isn't your problem. Why are you even talking about it? There are people whose role it would be, if they thought it was a problem, which my opinion, whether it was or not, is irrelevant. But the person that I was talking to thought it was a problem. I said, that's okay. If it is, she's got already a line of people that can say something who have the right authority and the right relationship to say something. Part of loving your neighbor as yourself is recognizing, because by the way, you do it to other people, and then if they do it to you, you get all upset. Well, who are you to tell me what to do? Well, why do you tell everybody else what to do? Look, when you're in these positions, you have to understand that all correction, and I've said this 100 times, all correction has to come out of a right relationship. Right relationship meaning that you have the right relationship with that person to warrant that correction. If you're not the right person, in other words, a person with the appropriate relationship, you do not have any place to correct them. And you need to stop. That is not how you love each other. You don't want anybody doing that to you. Why would you want to do that to anybody else? And so, look, I mean, I've seen this even. I had to correct, so it's even. We had to correct both my wife's parents and my parents who went to correct my children when they were like 2 or 3 years old when I was standing right there. I was like, excuse me, I'm their father. I'll correct them if I want to correct them. You don't get to do that. Not with me standing right here. So if I think it's okay, it's okay. If you don't like it, then we can go somewhere else because I'll respect that you don't want that in your house. But you don't get to do that. Are you listening, grandparents? All of you who don't want to respect that your children actually have more authority over their children than you do? All right? Because a lot of you out there call me up and are struggling, blah, 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 because you have adult children in their 40s who have their children in their 20s, and you all want to, you only have a limited authority. Accept that frustrating reality, okay? And that's part of loving each other. That's part of loving your neighbor as yourself. You have to know your boundaries and the role that you have. I don't have a role necessarily to go to any one of you and correct you, even though you're here and I'm the teacher. Because without relationship, just because you're here, I don't know what relationship you think you have with me and what relationship you would allow me to have with you in terms of the ability to correct or to mold or to guide or to counsel. That has to be by agreement. Some relationships are by default. My children, by default, they're my children. Okay? My wife, by default, I chose her, she chose me. We have a default relationship. You here with me, we have to have one by agreement. We'd actually have to sit down and have a conversation where you've said to me, I would like you to be my rabbi, giving me authority to speak if there's something you are doing that you would like me to be having the authority to come and say something. Because people come up to you all the time, do you see so-and-so doing that? How come you're letting them do that? I said, I don't have that relationship. Now, if one of you is doing something that's creating a problem for other people, I may have one of the team or myself go over to you and say, hey, I'd like you to stop that because you're causing a problem for other people. You can keep doing it if you want, but just not here. Whatever the thing is that they were doing. But let's understand that to love each other, we have to understand the whole nature of relationships with each other. And it's not the same as our vertical relationship, because with a vertical relationship, there is only one relationship. That's our creator, and we are the creation, and we love with everything. Depending on how well I know you, or how well you know somebody, you're going to have a wide variety of levels of relationship. Can we agree on that? And depending on the, by the way, and be careful that you both have to see the relationship on the same level. Don't fall into that trap. You may think you and I have a great, deep, whatever, and I may not think that. Or I may think we have a certain level and go to correct you and you don't think that. Make sure that there's a clarity on the relationship. 90% of marital fights are because they've got aspects of their relationship they never agreed to. Each one thought they did. Oh, well, you're my husband, so you agreed to do these things. Oh, I don't remember doing that. Oh, you're my wife. Oh, I don't remember ever doing that. Which is why when I counsel people for marriage, I have them do an expectations exercise where they explain to each other what they think and what they expect of the other person. And then they can choose to agree or not. At least they understand that's what the other person's expecting. See, Abba's telling us in his book, this is what I expect of you, and you can agree or not. And if you agree, it's called covenant. If you don't, you're out there in the world. You're not covenanted. All other relationships are similar in that they have to be agreed to, but they're not as clear-cut as this. We have a book telling us what he expects. And then he anoints those to help explain that to you. All other relationships are unique. Okay? I have a very good relationship with the Shamishes and with Uncle Bob, as you know, who's my best friend who's here. But all of those relationships are different. I do not have the same relationship with the two Shamishes sitting right here, with Kurt and with Rob. Similar in some ways, different in others, because of the level of how well we know each other, how long we know each other. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, some of it's similar because I'm the rabbi and they're the Shamishes, so some of it is very similar. But this is part of how do you love your neighbor as yourself. Well, first you're going to have to get to know each other, accept each other. See, some of you can't love the neighbor as yourself because you don't even accept yourself. You don't love yourself. So how are you going to love others? You need counseling. And remember what I said last time. I said we're all broken, we're all damaged, we're all undiagnosed and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know what? Then get therapy. I'm not saying that to be funny. I'm being serious. Don't be embarrassed to go get help. And I mean everybody in this room, everybody on live stream, we all could use some help. All of you have been traumatized. All of you have got certain PTSD triggers. All of you have got all these things that you need help unraveling, disconnecting. I mean, we just can't ignore the minefield that you've created. You've got to go and actively deactivate every one of those mines. And you may not be able to do that without a guide who understands those particular things. Well, I was molested as a child. Well, then you need to talk to somebody that works with people like that. I was abused in this way or that way. Well, then you should talk to somebody who can help you unravel that. A lot of you have marriages that are just not getting there because you can't have a good marriage relationship because of the baggage you brought in. And you can't just ignore it. It's there. Okay? I mean, I'm telling you, I talk to people and I realize, well, part of your problem is that your spouse hates men or your spouse hates women or whatever. I mean, it's there. Or there's a fear because of abuses or there's some other thing. And so they're not able to have the level of relationship that you want with them. Huge problem. And why is that problem there? Because life causes us to be damaged, and then we don't get help. See, you know, if you start having symptoms like a cough or a fever or any kind of health symptom, most of us, if we're not sure what to do, some things we know, okay, we'll take a little of this or something else. But what if you don't know what to do? It's like some sort of symptom of something you're having, you don't know what it is. You go to someone who's trained and ask them to evaluate and diagnose your problem. First, you do what? You notice you have a problem. Okay? I felt terrible. I had an ongoing fever that I normally, I would do what I would normally do for a fever. It wasn't going away. I was having trouble breathing and coughing. So I said, I probably need to go see somebody to figure out what this is. If your life, your relationships are not functioning in a way that works for you and the other person, husband, wife, parent and child, friends, coworkers, whatever, you might want to figure out what it is and stop blaming everybody else. Think about your relationship and say, okay, I have this problem with this person. Go back one relationship. I have the same problem with that person. Go back one relationship. Wait a minute. There's a common denominator. You. Stop always blaming everybody else. Unless every person you're with has that same problem, which they don't. They all have different problems. But you're going to run into the same problem with everybody if you bring your problem. And then when it triggers, we're living in reality now. Remember, we're living in now and reality. In this now reality, all of you need to get help. Don't be offended. Don't get all that. I don't like this guy. Doesn't he know it costs money? Look, all the things I'm teaching you, do you know how much money I spent to learn all this stuff? All the books, videos, seminars. Yes, it costs money. Anybody ever accomplished anything invested time, effort, and money. You know what? I bet you can find extra money in your budget somewhere, like cutting back on, coffee or cigarettes or video games or cable. Look, whatever. Maybe you don't need that many gigabytes on your phone to play all your games. Save some money, put it into something that actually is going to fix and change your life. Invest in you. Well, I don't want to go to the doctor. It costs money. Well, then you may never fix your problem. Well, I don't want to go. Well, what if I go to that person and it doesn't work? Then go to another person. What, do you think every doctor, every therapist is going to be exactly the one you need? There's a reason why a lot of insurance companies require you to get a second opinion. You try. This is good. It's not so good. Okay, now I have to make a decision. It's good, I stay. It's not so good, I try another one. Not it's not so good, I quit. Try another one. Start off with the thought, I can find help. Help exists. It's out there. Okay? Unless you just like where you are and you're going to struggle forever. All right, continuing. Back to the verses. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these... What these? The empty words, the wrath of Elohim comes upon the sons of disobedience. Because those who are listening to empty words are being disobedient because the empty words say, you don't have to do that, or you can do this, it's okay, but they're empty because they don't have the substance of truth. So because of the empty words, the sons of disobedience are in all kinds of trouble and the wrath of Elohim is coming down on them. He says, therefore, do not become partakers with them. Listen now. He's flowing and shifting through this thought process. He starts off with becoming an imitator of Elohim. He says, walk in love as Messiah. He lists a bunch of things not to do. Then he tells you that people that do these things have no inheritance. He tells you that part of the problem is that people are listening to empty words. And then he says now, therefore, don't be partakers with those who? Who's the them he's referring to now? Those that are doing the wrong behaviors and listening to the empty words. Don't do that. You are imitating Elohim. He's contrasting two things. Those that are doing and imitating Elohim, imitate them, hang out with them, spend time with them, learn from them. Not the ones who are doing filthy gain and that are doing unclean things and whoring and idolatry and all that stuff. And don't be listening to the empty words. Because some of you still have teachers you used to listen to. You know they're not teaching it right, but you like them, so you're still listening. You enjoy them. You are likely and susceptible to start being taught by those words that are empty. The more it goes in, the more it will take. What I mean by take, meaning take root. You keep putting it in there, the more it's going to take hold. Oh, no, 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 I know. Don't worry about me. Listen, had a guy come up to me multiple times. People come up to me. Well, you know, Rabbi, I want to go deeper. And I've told you the story already. And they wanted to go into some Jewish yeshiva thing. And I said, look, I'm telling you right now, it's not a good idea. You're going to likely give up Messiah and go right into Judaism. Oh, no, not me. Guess where they are now? Right in Judaism. You are going to become what you immerse in. I had a sister-in-law. She put her child in an Adventist school. She was not Adventist. But that was the only school that she could find that she felt comfortable more than public school to put her kid in. Well, guess what? After 6 years there, her daughter sounded a whole lot like an Adventist. I sent my children to Chabad at preschool, and I yanked them out just before they started sounding like that. Because there wasn't any preschool nursery that I could put them in New York. They only offered at the most pre-kindergarten for half a day, pre-K. But before they were younger than that. But I had to monitor them because they were starting to pick all that up. So don't think you're not affected by all the things you listen to and all your inputs. You're kidding yourself. He says here, let no one deceive you, including you. You will deceive yourself. With empty words of like, oh no, I'm sure it's okay. Yahweh knows my heart, blah, blah, blah. Don't become partakers with them. Verse 8, for you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Master. Walk as children of light. Man, that sounds like a good topic for a teaching. You need to go back and listen to that, the darkness and light teaching. It helps you understand the movement from where you start, which is in darkness, into what he calls light. Now, in this contrast, he's letting you know, the imitators of Elohim, the ones walking in love as Messiah has also loved us, that's called light. The ones who are unclean, whoring, greedy gain, idolatry, foolish talking, all this other stuff going on here, that's darkness. He says, you were once darkness. That wasn't a question mark, by the way. That was a statement that's supposed to be true. You were, not now, but you were darkness. However, if you're still partaking, you're still darkness. I don't care how much light you have, you're still darkness. Now, there might be some light in that darkness, and that light you can still see in the darkness, but you're still mostly in the dark. Okay? You shine enough light, there's nothing hidden, there are no shadows, everything is in light. You put one candle in this room at night with nothing else on, you'll see that candle in the darkness, but you won't see much else because everything else is still in darkness. He says, you were once darkness, but now. When does now occur? Is it in the past? Is it in the future? No, it's now. But you are light in the Master. Walk. Do your walk. Do the Torah. Do the covenant. Do what you do. All the things you do. Make decisions as children of light. Stop making decisions as children of darkness. And what does that look like? Because you're thinking, well, I don't do those things. Well, you do when you try to spin and rationalize to yourself and justify doing something you really know you shouldn't do. That's when you are thinking like and making decisions like darkness. Darkness is the one that justifies, rationalizes, spins in order to have what you want, in order to get what you want, to do what you want, or not to have to do what you don't want to do. You rationalize to yourself, you spin it, you have a problem with justification. I'm not talking like the way Christianity says, you want to justify your actions, okay? He says you're to walk as children of light. Now, this is all in this contrast. Where are we on time? We got a couple more minutes. He says, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Listen now. Proving. How do you prove something? How do you prove something? You test it. That's how you prove it. You give it a chance. You check it out. You try it. You prove it. Well, you know, I saw this life hack on somewhere, and it said if I did this, and then you say, okay, that sounds interesting. I might try that. And you try it, and either it works or it doesn't work. You prove it. Okay? He's telling you, the covenanted life, this walking in light, you need to prove it. He says, what you need to prove, though, is understand what is well-pleasing to the master. Okay? So he says, look, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, and that fruit of the Spirit is going to test out, trust Yahweh, and do what he said to prove what is well-pleasing to the master. Not as what is well-pleasing to you, but what is well-pleasing to him. I've had lots of conversations with some of you over the years, so some of you, I'm not necessarily talking about people just in this room or whatever, where they've come to me in counsel, I said, look, is that what you want to do, or is that what he wants you to do? Is that going to be pleasing to you or pleasing to him? Who are you trying to please? Your wife, your husband, your parents, your kids, your boss? What's well-pleasing to him? Not all of them, including yourself. All right? Let's not get locked into that. He says, and have no fellowship with the fruitless works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Okay? And by reproof, he's talking about you making a decision to reject and not be involved. It doesn't mean you literally have to go over there and do in a reproving way, scold, correct, and that kind of thing. It's not what the Greek word really doesn't fit that as much. It's more of the idea of confuting it or, you know, being exposed to it and recognizing it for what it is and then just making a decision to get away from it. All right? But you see it for what it is and then you make your choice. Have no fellowship with the fruitless works of darkness. In other words, don't have that be a part of your behavior, but also don't spend time fellowshipping with those who are still walking in darkness, who think they're walking in light, who you're going to start to imitate them. In other words, be careful of the amount of time you spend. Now, don't spend no time with people that are new and they're trying to figure it out, but just be careful of the amount of time you spend and the quality and the type of things that are going on in the time you spend with people that are still in darkness. Hopefully that's making some sense to you. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You can go back to the old stomping ground, find your old buddies, and next thing you know, you're out there at the bar drinking and cursing and doing all kinds of things, and you have no idea how you ended up right back where you used to be. So be careful of the amount of time and the fellowship that you have with these things. But he's also talking about on a personal level, you should not have a relationship with those behaviors. So be careful of the people doing those behaviors in your relationship and also yourself not having a relationship with those behaviors. That make sense? We're good? Let's see. In verse 12, we'll finish there. It says, for it is a shame even to speak of what is done by them in secret. So that's how we know he's not just talking about your relationship with the fruitless works of darkness. He says it's even a shame to speak of what is done by them in secret. You must really be careful of your relationships. Look, it's not 1984, but Big Brother is watching you. And we're not talking about the government, we're talking about Yeshua. Everything you do. Like, it's the reason you're here is to show them the decisions you make. So don't be all paranoid, oh, they're watching me. That's why you're here, so they can watch you. And they're not judgmentally like, oh, forget it, that one dumb thing you did. They're watching you just like you would watch a little child make mistakes, learn from their mistakes, not learn from their mistakes. Then you chastise them a little bit. Then maybe they learn from their mistakes and they make some progress. Think of it just like a parent to a little child. Problem is, the whole congregation of quote-unquote covenanted people are a bunch of two-year-olds. You know how independent two-year-olds are, how hard it is to deal with them, the terrible twos. The body's a bunch of terrible twos. But Abba, like you, working with a terrible two, but with a lot more patience than you might have, is watching, hoping that person will grow up out of two to eventually 10 and then 20 and 30 and grow into a child of the living Elohim. But you have to know that's what he's looking at you like when you're trying to deal with that challenging 2 and 3 year old. And they are challenging. They didn't accidentally make up that phrase. Okay? But I tell you what, counsel some people and you realize some of them are terrible 32s and 42s and 62s. All right? But if we're going to love each other and love our neighbors, we have to understand this stuff. Let's go before the Father. Father, we come before you. And Father, we really, really want to get this right. We want to have our inheritance. We want to do everything that we're supposed to do so that we can have the inheritance that you desire to give us. And we understand and recognize, Father, that to have that inheritance, we have to figure out and come to a place in our character, in our growth, in our transformation, where we naturally and fully love you and love each other appropriately. That, Father, that you would help us and encourage us and be patient with us as we learn to make the decisions in those areas, the decisions and choices that affect and exemplify our love towards you and the decisions that we make in exemplifying our love towards each other. I would even throw in, Father, that you would help us in our love towards ourselves. And so, Father, we want to thank you for your patience and your mercy and your compassion, which is boundless to deal with all these twos and threes. I can't imagine what it must be like to be where you are, looking down at all of us and just sometimes thinking, when are they going to wake up and grow up? Father, we want to. We really do. And we're so glad you give us these feasts where we can have messages like this to help us and encourage us and remind us that it's time to grow up and to get to that place. So, Father, again, be patient with us. Continue to hold our hand and encourage us as we, you know, keep prodding us along the way to keep moving and keep moving and keep growing as we go through the process of imitating you and Yeshua and walking in that love so that, Father, that we can do and discover and be partakers of and prove what is well-pleasing in your sight. So, Father, we thank you, we praise you, and we give you all glory and all honor. In the name above all names, Yeshua our Messiah. Amen. Amen.